Good morning and welcome to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. I'm Bob Russell. I'll be your host today. I'm joined in studio, as always, by my co-host, partner in crime, and fellow traveler, John Jurisic.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
Well, not a lot. But we'll get to that in a second. John, who is owner of Harbor Digital Media, past president of the Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce, and current director of the BC Chamber of Commerce. John, I always get you at this point in time to tell people about our Twitter address.
Yeah. If folks would like to connect with us, simply send a tweet and include in it a hashtag. S-U-N-A-M-P-A, hashtag Sunampa. I feel like a football player when I say that.
Sunampa.
Hashtag Sunampa. Let's go.
Okay.
Well, by the way, special shout out to my friends from last night. Good conversation. Good conversation. How you doing, guys?
And you're not going to share
They're probably
with
awake.
Us.
No, of course not.
Share with us, of course, who that is. Okay, well, thank you. Before we get into the meat of the show, let's do a little politics. John, what's going on with the Conservative Party? And I'm talking about the BC Conservative Party.
Well, I have to tell you, Bob, I'm feeling a little bit sick today.
Yes.
Because, of course, I live in a sick culture.
Yes.
In a city full of sick people.
Oh, okay. We're talking about the Conservative Party.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay. And
okay.
I suppose now Van Dogg and MLA, who has quit, the fourth, fifth time?
Yeah.
and he comes from Abbotsford. I suspect they're sick, too, over there.
Yeah.
And, you know, generally speaking, how do I feel about that? Well, I feel offended that I have to frame it this way.
Yeah.
I have politicians who are saying stupid things and doing stupid things.
Yeah.
I don't feel good about that.
Yeah.
I don't feel good about those people spending my, 51% or 30% of my tax money.
Yeah.
It's not good. What is going on, Bob? What's going on? We're obviously BC has a reputation for odd politics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're kind of going off the side of the table here.
Yeah. But you know what? I always object to that characterization of BC from the perspective that it kind of permits it to happen. You know, there's an attitude, and I certainly see it. I've seen it many times in our media, particularly those parts of the media that cover politics, that, you know, they like to view politics as entertainment. And they like to encourage and reinforce the notion that politics is a little wacky here. And it's like the old saying, you know, if you treat someone like they're stupid, they will be. If you treat them like they're smart, they'll be smart. And we got to stop talking about wacky BC politics. If we don't like what's going on, we need to change it.
But we are talking about wacky BC politics.
Well, you know, I don't know how wacky it is. I mean, we're look at it this way. You know, for the last, you know, certainly since Gordon Campbell was first elected, there wasn't a lot of wackiness going on. It's only in the last couple of years that we've seen some changes and upheaval, but we had a fairly stable, predictable government for those years, as indicated with you know the majority governments you want.
Well, to reflect somewhat more seriously on this,
yes.
As I haven't yet.
Clearly,
there's a shift.
Yeah.
Okay, because the assumption is that the free enterprise / right hand side was split, that the coalition was breaking.
Yeah.
It appears after what happened in the last 48 hours that is consolidating again.
Mm-hmm.
It appears the conservatives aren't ready to be government. It appears.
Yeah.
I suppose if John Cummins phoned in, he would violently disagree.
Mm-hmm.
It appears that their one MLA, not appears, I'm sorry, he is gone.
Yeah.
They have another fellow gone, John Martin.
John Martin, that's right.
So I think the sense that might have broken the coalition is beginning to evaporate.
Mm-hmm.
The playing field has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, it seems the other side is now beginning to feel the effects of some splitting of the vote. I know that we were going to talk later on about Andrew Weaver
and
the Green Party.
We will later
but,
in the show.
But somebody... on the liberal side has been having the happy dance for the last 48 hours.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I want to go back to what you said at the outset. I mean, you said, you know, it wasn't serious. I think your comments reflect what a lot of British Columbians feel when they look at our politics, that, you know, what's going on here? When's somebody just going to stop playing politics and actually get on with doing their job?
Well, okay, so we have to basically, generally speaking, it appears to me the folks that I deal with have to work extraordinarily hard to make a living.
Yeah.
Whether they're in small business, whether they're in the public sector, whether wherever they are,
mm-hmm.
they're working very, very hard to make a living.
Yeah.
And then we see folks who are supposed to be representing how they spend some of our money saying things that I would never say,
mm-hmm.
except if I was on a public affairs talk show.
Yeah, well, you can say anything here, as we've found
out. And I wonder, excuse me? Yeah. Like what, you know, Christie says that the legislature is this bubble.
Yeah.
Maybe it is. Maybe what sort of environment allows this sort of stuff to happen?
Yeah.
If I were to say that as a boss of a business, mm-hmm. and talk about my business the way she talks about her business,
mm-hmm.
I'd be fired.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, but on that point, you know, and it got a lot of play here in Victoria. You know, the comment she made, and as you know, I took a little issue with the fact that as much was being made out of it as it was, because and it goes to my earlier point about the role the media plays in you know, encouraging the circus.
Was that who she was talking about?
Well, no,
she clearly couldn't have been talking nor intended to talk about the population.
No,
it must have been the media.
Well, media was part of it, but my point, you know, was going to be that, you know, these were comments that she made last May that were, you know, pulled back out and warmed up and trotted out this past week as an explanation for, you know, put in the context of there being no fall session, leaving people with the impression that that was why there wasn't going to be a fall session. And I found that, frankly, irresponsible on the part of the media. I mean, as you know, I come to view these issues very much from my background as a government person, as in
Bob,
another province.
If you had that on tape,
yeah.
You're telling me, as a reporter, you wouldn't push that out at some time?
No, I wouldn't. I would, you know, she said it in May at the end of a spring session, and, you know, I've worked in the legislature, and I can tell you they are bubbles. But when you get to the end of a session, you know, the door doesn't hit you on the way out because, you know, your work days start before 6, go to midnight, as they should, because it's important work. It's very intense work. And, you know, you need a break. And I take that as sort of the context within which she made those comments in May. And they had no place being put in front of why there's no fall session. There were other legitimate criticisms that could have been made. Like, for example, you know, she's gotten into the difficulty she has for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that, you know, she appeared to want the job more than she wanted to do anything with the job. And not having a fall legislative session feeds that narrative.
The local reaction was interesting. It was very emotive.
Yeah.
And that surprised me a little bit.
Yeah.
To the degree to which it appeared we seemed very defensive, mm-hmm. as Victorians. I think that, frankly, I don't get that. I define myself,
yeah.
My family, my friends, my business community defines themselves on their own.
Yeah.
We don't need nor care for anyone else, mm-hmm. to tell us what we are supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's for us to determine. Frankly, very, very proud of how we determine that.
Yeah.
If somebody from Vancouver, let alone a premier, tells me what I'm supposed to be or what I am, don't care. Get out of my way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you
but,
and I
But
just...
the reaction, you know, was intriguing, to say the least.
Well, yeah. I'm with you on this. I mean, you and I, just prior to going on air, were up on the roof. And taking
were we?
Yes, we were.
There's a patio up there. Let's just explain
okay,
that.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, there is a patio up there. And we were looking around, and it's like, and you know, you and I, you've lived your whole life here. I've lived more than 20 years here. And one thing that never stops to amaze you is what a wonderful place we live. And you, we were up there looking around going, yeah, I mean,
hey, you know what? I don't care if we're sick. I don't care if the legislature is a bubble. I don't care if we have the best outside lavatory in, on the planet. That is my Victoria, yeah. And no one else is going to define it for me, interestingly enough. But however, yeah, we seem to place politicians mm-hmm. on a higher moral and ethical ground that they need to sort of react in a certain way. And frankly, the way she reacted to what is probably a certain reality to it, and we could spend another hour talking about this.
Which we won't, folks.
Was unprofessional,
yeah,
unwarranted.
Yes.
And frankly, naive of her to say that to a reporter.
And John, I couldn't agree with you more. And with that, enough politics. We're going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about real issues.
You've locked your doors. You think you're safe.
What?
But you can't stop.
No. How?
The arrival of your bills. CFAX 1070 understands. That's why we're giving you a chance to beat your bills. Head over to the all-new CFAX1070.com and show us the bill you want taken care of. Then listen for Al Farabee to announce your name weekday mornings at 7:10. You can win $50 to spend at Red Barn Market, taking the pressure off your food bill. And you'll qualify to have CFAX 1070 pay up to $500 to beat your bills. To enter and for full details, head to CFAX1070.com. Don't yell at your bills.
Get away!
Beat your bills. Beat your bills with Red Barn Market and Victoria's News Authority. CFAX 1070.
Christine, my back's killing me, and I'd like to come to Sleep Country to buy a new bed, but things are a little tight at the moment.
Have you ever considered financing?
I guess I didn't really think about financing my mattress.
You know, it's funny. What surprises me is that Sleep Country has offered a variety of financing programs for years, and yet many customers aren't aware that we offer financing at all. I guess it's because we don't talk about it as much as the others do.
So you've got the don't pay until whenever plans?
We sure do. And what's more, Sleep Country makes financing your new mattress really easy with no interest payments that will fit any budget. And we allow our customers to finance their entire purchase price, including the taxes. Come into Sleep Country for all the exciting details. Remember, we specialize in mattresses. So when you're buying a mattress, we need to have all the solutions, including financing.
Why buy a mattress anywhere?
For a limited time, get introductory pricing on the exclusive revolutionary new Optimum Sealy Posturepedics, only available at Sleep Country.
Time is not on our side. Act now with your future in mind. Financial market volatility is fact, and those facts are worrisome. Put your financial needs in the hands of successful and proven wealth management advisors. Todd Vaughn and Alan Bevan, through TD Waterhouse Private Investment Advice and the TD Bank Group, bring you the kind of guidance and strength you need in today's market. Call them today at 250-953-6015 and stop worrying.
TD Waterhouse Private Investment Advice is a division of TD Waterhouse Canada Inc., member Canadian Investor Protection Fund.
CFAX 1070 is where Victoria turns first for local news, weather, and traffic, with more news than ever before. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Good morning and welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. My name's Bob Russell. I'm joined in studio, as always, by John Jurisic.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, John. We have vented our political spleen. And
yeah,
now
I'm not feeling so sick anymore.
Okay, good. Now we're going to move over to talk about real stuff, okay? If a nation expects to be ignorant and free, it expects what never was and never will be. So said Thomas Jefferson, the father of public education and the father of the first public education system in the world, that of our neighbors to the south. It was Jefferson's belief that you cannot have a democracy unless you train citizens. Yes, folks, it's more than job training. One could argue there is nothing we do as a community that is more important than educating our children, and this would be a good time to pay attention to it. Our provincial government has decided to overhaul the province's kindergarten to grade 12 curriculum, or as you will hear it referred to, K-12. According to former Education Minister George Abbott, reform is desperately needed. We have an education system that was designed for another era and different needs. The time has come to adapt and prepare kids for a changing world. We can't afford to wait any longer. Next week, we'll be discussing the issues that this review will address. But today, as a prelude to that, we are going to be focusing on the different ways education gets delivered in our province. Public education isn't just about public schools. Joining us on the line is Peter Froese, Executive Director of the Federation of Independent School Associations in BC. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
Let's get the conversation started. I guess, you know, my first question would be, who is the Federation of Independent School Associations?
The Federation of Independent School Associations is a non-government organization that represents independent schools throughout the province of British Columbia. There's approximately 350 independent schools operating in British Columbia that enroll about 73,000 students. And they represent a wide range of diverse schools, from university prep to faith-based, to Montessori, to Waldorf, to special needs, differentiated learning. All of these programs are available through a variety of strategies within the independent schools. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Peter. John Jurisic. Tell me. Let's frame this a little bit. What is the relationship to the public schools? Do folks have a choice? It's just some educating before we understand what you folks do, etc. Do you have to pay for belonging to your to attending one of your association's schools? How does all that work?
Okay, the independent schools in the province are exactly that. They're independent. They're operated by a not-for-profit organization that has decided that they have a particular emphasis they want to place on education, and that's the focus of their particular school. Parents can choose that education. It's not something that is required in the sense that you're not forced to attend an independent school. It's a choice that people make. And as a result of that choice, there is a fee generally that parents have to pay to attend these schools, and that fee can vary from something to the tune of $1,000 for some of the more economical ones, all the way up to many thousands of dollars if you're attending some university prep schools, such as St. George's, St. Mike's, and the like. But essentially, it's a parent choice. Now, these schools, for the most part, there are some variations, but the majority of these schools teach the British Columbia curriculum. That is the same curriculum that is taught in the province of British Columbia's public system. And within that context, they issue a Dogwood certificate. All of these schools are supervised, if you will, by the province of British Columbia through a regulatory system, and we're governed by the Independent School Act, which is an act of the provincial government.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. On the issue of this goes to the issue of funding. So a parent can choose, the central issue here is choice, and they can choose to send their child to one of these schools, and as you indicated, there is going to be a cost associated with them doing that. Do they get any type of subsidy or compensation or tax break, for spending that money on alternate education or independent education? I mean, is the fee? I guess another way to frame the question is the fee before tax or after tax?
That would depend on the nature of the school. Again, since we're talking fees, the way the funding works within the province of British Columbia, independent schools, they receive a portion of the operating grant that is granted to public schools.
Okay.
So, for example, the average cost per pupil in the province of British Columbia last year was $8,491 per student. Independent schools, the majority of them, would be funded at 50%. They're called Group 1 schools. And those schools, what that means is that the operating cost in that independent school has to be equal to or less than the public school in which that independent, in the district in which that independent school is located. If the cost per pupil exceeds that that amount of the public school, then the grant that's operated or provided to the independent school drops to 35%. And there's a handful of schools that don't take any grant at all. They don't want any involvement. Those are called Group 3 schools. But in terms of what a parent pays, what is the benefit? We argue that essentially the parents who choose to send their kids to independent schools, they're choosing to pay twice. They continue to pay their own taxes for the public system, and by the way, we support a strong public education system as well. That's essential. We just value the opportunity for parents to choose. There are some cases where, especially in faith-based schools, where a portion of that fee that is paid to the school by way of tuition can be tax deductible because it is used for to support some religious or ideological training that is also provided at the school.
Okay, and that tax credit or exemption, has that been around for a while, or is that a new thing?
No, that's been around for quite a while, and that comes from the CRA.
That's the federal system. Yeah. No, and okay. So just so I'm clear, there are some schools in the independent system who do receive operating grant assistance from the province, but there are some that don't. Is that correct?
That is correct. But the vast majority, I would say pretty well 85% of them get a grant from the government.
Right. Give us a sort of a – paint a picture of the different types of schools that are out there. And what I'm thinking about is you know, the different choices parents are making, what they might want to send – you know, prefer to send their child to rather than to the public system.
Sure. The largest group is are the Catholic schools. There are five dioceses located throughout British Columbia, and they have a very extensive network of schools. The Catholic schools are probably organized very similarly to the public system in that they have a superintendent, they've got a board office, they provide directors of instruction, they provide special needs support. And so their structure is very similar to the public system, just in a smaller scale. Of the families that choose to send their kids to independent schools, about 30% of them are going to Catholic schools. Another group is called the Society of Christian Schools in British Columbia. They constitute about 15% of the independent school enrollment, and they their roots are of Christian Reform. Netherlands is their home base when they originally came to British Columbia many decades ago, and they have a strong network of schools throughout the province as well. Then there's also an evangelical group. It's called the Association of Christian Schools International in British Columbia. They represent about 16% of the enrollment. And they are the families that choose to have an evangelical faith perspective to their education. Mm-hmm. And so in addition to teaching the curriculum for the province of British Columbia, it is also integrated with biblical instruction within both those two associations. Then you have a large group. The association is called the Independent School Association. They are the university prep school. So if you want to have a strong commitment to academic excellence, you want your kids to head for universities, the ISA schools are they're about 18%. And they are located Vancouver Island, Victoria, largely in the Vancouver area. They do an excellent job of educating their kids. In addition to that, there are many independent schools that are what I would call standalone schools. Mm-hmm. They are, in many cases, they're connected to a particular church community, and they have a school attached to it. Or they are a group of parents that come together and say, we want our parents to, we want our children to be educated along this particular ideological value system. And they represent about 20% of the enrollment, and they include Seventh-day Adventist families, Jewish families, Sikh families, Muslim, Montessori, and then I mentioned before Waldorf. There are some special education schools. And also, something that's really growing, both in public and independent schools, is distributed learning. Mm-hmm. That's the choice that families are having to have their kids educated online. And there's 18 schools within independent schools that are offering online education. And they generally are not aligned to a particular faith group, although there are some. They're just simply offering families the choice to have their kids educated through distributed learning. Yeah.
Peter, we're just going to have to take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, we're going to explore that last group a little bit more.
Sure.
Japanese food priced right. You want some? You'll find it at Osaka Sushi on Oak Bay Avenue. I'm talking miso soup Mondays, California roll Tuesdays, half-price appetizer Wednesdays, teriyaki beef and chicken roll Thursdays, sake and beer specials Fridays and Saturdays, and on Sundays, half-price tempura. 7 days, seven specials. Osaka Sushi, the perfect place for a business lunch or a fun dinner. Just minutes from downtown, parking is free. Try Osaka Sushi on Oak Bay Avenue, one block shy of Val Bay Road.
Have you been living with a water entry problem in your basement or crawl space? Have you been reluctant to deal with it because you saw the mess and heard the cost next door at your neighbor's? Well, Earth Service Drain Master has been solving water entry and drainage problems economically for 32 years. Trust our drainage team to restore, repair, or renew your existing system back into working condition. Call Earth Service Drain Master at 250-479-0195. We will be glad to arrange a visit and assess your problem.
Shop, spin, and win with Save-On Foods for a chance to win a Caribbean cruise for four and more great prizes. Plus, get assorted varieties of sun-ripe 100% pure apple juice, card price $5 for $10. Or assorted Pepsi drinks, packs of 12 cans, card price $2 for $8. Visit Save-On Foods and shopandspin.com for complete details. Save-On Foods, BC's very own since 1915.
Hi, this is Barry Bowman for Ross Place Retirement Residence. As you may know, Ross Place has completed a major renovation. They currently have suites starting at only $1,950 a month, including all meals. So if you or a member of your family are considering moving to a retirement residence, take a tour of Ross Place, and you'll be very surprised by the great room, movie theater, billiards room, and more. Respite suites are also available for $75 a day, including all meals. Call now to arrange a personal tour.
Hey there, Johnson. How was Palm Springs?
Great. Shot some golf.
Nice.
Got some sun.
Nice.
Oh, and I played some tennis.
Nice.
I fractured my wrist.
Nice.
And I took an ambulance ride.
Nice.
I had surgery.
Oh, nice.
And I wrote a check to the hospital for $45,000.
Yeah, they accept checks. Nice.
Don't let a medical emergency ruin your next trip south. Protect yourself with BCAA Travel Insurance. Save up to 12% online at bcaa.com.
Your fair weather and not so fair weather friends. With a forecast you can count on. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Good morning. Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. John Jurisic and I are talking with Peter Froese, the Executive Director of the Federation of Independent School Associations of BC. And when we went to commercial break, Peter, you brought up distributed learning as sort of a new and growing area. Before we get to that, I just one quick comment. You were characterizing what the different independent schools were, and a great many of them were religious based, and the thing about the Catholic schools I find interesting is that and maybe something that a lot of British Columbians might not appreciate is that I do because I grew up in Ontario is that there are parts of this country where, you know, the separate Catholic school system is actually constitutionally mandated and is every bit as much a part of the public school system as the other public school system.
And funded at 100% as
precisely.
Well.
Precisely. Funded at 100%, and that's actually mandated in our Constitution. But let's return back to distributed learning. This is fascinating. What is motivating people to seek out this method of educating their children?
Well, from an educational perspective, that is the persons that are delivering the educational services in schools, distributed learning really became an asset to brick-and-mortar buildings because of the demands that students had, especially when you got into the graduation program, grade 10, 11, 12. Mm-hmm. The number of options that students had to complete or chose to complete is probably a better word, made it difficult for them to fit in all the core requirements and then take all those additional courses that they were really interested in taking, such as band, choir, vocational courses, and the like. And so what happened was the creation of distributed learning created flexibility within brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. And that allowed students to be fully engaged in the brick and mortar schools in the daytime and pick up as well some distributed learning courses on the side that they could complete at home or during vacant blocks during the school day as well. In addition, from a parent's perspective, particularly homeschooling parents, they found this as an amazing vehicle to connect with some of the courses for which they felt ill-equipped to teach their kids, and so they could teach their kids at home and connect through a distributed learning program and have their kids involved in Chem 11, for example, something they might have difficulty teaching. So that program has really blossomed. Some kids don't do well in brick-and-mortar schools, so distributed learning also provides an opportunity for them to complete a Dogwood certificate completely online and in an environment where they feel comfortable.
Peter, I could talk about this at length. I owned or was a partner in a learning company for a long time and interacted with ministries of education. Is one of the local distributed learning schools here in Victoria SIDES, South Island Distance Education School? Is that an example of that kind of school?
I believe that is one.
Yeah. Okay. So then that allow. So, but notwithstanding, if we could wade into perhaps something which will invariably become more political, we don't intend to put you in a difficult spot, but I think our listeners are probably wanting to know, when one makes a choice between the public school system and an independent school, is that these days becoming more because they think one isn't working as well or one is less effective? Like, are we able to wade into this a little bit here without compromising
sure.
yourself?
Yeah, it's no problem. I take the view that the public school, I mean, CBC did a segment a week or so ago, and they were asking the question, is the public school system broken? I don't take that view. I'm a product of the public system. I spent 20 years teaching in the public system prior to working with independent schools. And the public school system has much to offer. If you look internationally on how our kids in British Columbia are performing compared to international standards, we perform exceptionally well. I think there are clearly issues that where the public system has become too politicized. That's the statement that I think I can safely make. Mm-hmm. And that has caused families to so-called kick the tires of independent schools to see what are the options out there. Parents want their kids to be educated in an environment that is safe, that encourages them to excel to their potential. And when that is compromised by individuals who make it political, Then parents look for alternatives. Now, quite frankly, within independent schools, that is not the way we would like parents to choose independent schools. We would prefer that they choose the schools because of the values and the perspectives that they offer. But I can tell you that this past year, there was a lot of kicking of tires. And from the initial indications coming in from our schools, it appears that the number of families that have chosen to place their kids in independent schools has increased over last year. And it, in many cases, though, it's difficult for parents to do so because a vast majority of the independent schools, especially in the Lower Mainland, are full.
Really?
And so it's difficult for parents to make that choice, even if they want to, because there's no space for the kids in that particular school.
Well, let me ask you, sort of asking John's question a different way. What can you tell us quantitatively about what has happened, say, over the last 10 years in terms of growth in the independent school system away from the public system? What does the growth look like numerically, both in terms of the number of schools and the number of students whose parents have taken that choice?
Yeah, I can't give you the numbers of families that have left the public system for independent schools. We don't keep that kind of statistic. But I can tell you that over the past four decades, independent schools have grown consistently. The highest growth that we've seen was 10%. But more recently, if you track the last, say, 6-7 years, you'll find that the growth in independent schools province-wide has been less than 1%. I can tell you it has never declined, even though in the province there is declining enrollment. Over the past decade, for example, about 65,000 students fewer are being educated in the public system. But with independent schools, we continue to grow, despite the lower demographic of school-age children in the province of British Columbia. Our enrollment has held, which has surprised us. We were expecting to see a decline in our enrollment as well, but that has not materialized.
So just so I can make things clear for our listeners, there's statistics and then there's statistics. And what you've just said is that in a pool that is getting smaller, school-age children, independent schools have never declined in enrollment, and there's always been a modest increase.
That is correct.
Yes, okay. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
And proportionally, if your listeners want to know how many families are choosing independent schools, we have about 11.6% of the K-12 enrollment that are of school-age kids in the province of British Columbia. About 11.6% of them are attending independent schools. The balance are in public schools.
Okay, so 12%, the parents of 12% of this province's students have decided to find a way to pay a fee of some sort to send their children to the independent system.
And I think you've stated that very correctly.
Yes.
A lot of people are of the impression that independent schools, this is for the wealthy, the families that have got all kinds of spare cash and they can throw money at education and it's easy for them. And this is clearly not the case. In the Group 1 schools where their funding is at 50% and their costs are less than that of the public system, there are many families that are literally sacrificing income and giving up holidays in order to put their kids into the educational program that they feel is appropriate for their children.
Yeah, exactly.
And I applaud them. I think it's I think in two regards. One, I appreciate the fact that our province has given parents that opportunity. And secondly, for parents to care that much about the education of their kids, that they're making those choices at expense to their own comfort of living.
Yeah. Peter, we just have to take another quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll keep talking about education.
The Royal Museum Shop. Intriguing and unique.
Where did you find that cute mammoth plush?
The Royal Museum Shop. It's a birthday present for my niece. And I bought this beautiful jewelry crafted by a local artist as a memento of my visit to the museum.
There's something for everyone at the Royal Museum Shop. Clothing, jewelry, books, from postcards to original artwork. Many items with a distinctly BC flavor. There's no admission fee and your purchases support the Royal BC Museum. Whatever the occasion, memories begin at the Royal Museum Shop.
Fall is in the air. You can feel the chill. Are you ready? Is your vehicle ready? Why gamble with your transportation? Enjoy the peace of mind knowing Island Muffler and Brake Auto Care has checked your vehicle's tires, alignment and balance, and fluid levels, including antifreeze. Island Muffler and Brake Auto Care services your vehicle according to manufacturer's warranty maintenance schedules. Island Muffler and Brake Auto Care, quality auto repairs and vehicle maintenance for over 40 years.
Island Muffler and Brake.
Joan and Bob here from Heirloom Linens.
With cooler nights upon us, don't forget our Canadian-made, regular-weight, wool-filled duvets.
Queen size, $139.99. King size, $179.99.
Don't know what to do with all those extra pennies no longer in circulation? We'll take them.
And because every penny counts, our feather duvets are only $69.99, any size.
Locally owned and operated for 17 years, we also accept competitors' coupons at the one and only Heirloom Linens in Broadmead Village.
We only sound expensive.
Metrolexus Toyota's factory-authorized clear-out is on now. The 2013s are arriving daily, and we need to make room. Savings up to $10,000 on select 2012 models. That's right, $10,000. So hurry in for best selection while they last. Or choose 0% financing up to 72 months. Metrolexus Toyota, voted year after year the best place to buy a new car in Victoria.
Who can ask for anything more? Metrolexus Toyota.
Douglas, across from Mayfair.
This year, Dance Victoria invites you to see the world. Now on sale, featuring award-winning choreography from Spain, Britain, Israel, the U.S., Canada, and New Zealand. Buy before October 15th and save on stunning performances by Les Ballets Jazz de Montreal, Rubber Band Dance Group, and New Zealand's dynamic Black Grace, a fusion of Maori and contemporary dance in a heart-stopping performance you'll never forget. Go to dancevictoria.com for videos. Dance Victoria, see the world. Proudly sponsored by Dermaspa.
Local news on your smartphone. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Go to CFAX1070.com. CFAX1070.com. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. My name's Bob Russell. I'm joined by John Jurisic. We're talking to Peter Froese, Executive Director of the Federation of Independent School Associations, just sort of going into our last segment. Now, Peter, you know, and before commercial break, you mentioned that you saw the last year there was an increase in the number of people who were kicking your tires or kicking the tires of your members. So let's talk about teachers. And who are the teachers in the independent school system? How are they certified? How are they regulated? And are they, in any cases, represented by a union?
In order to be funded from the province of British Columbia for a portion of your educational costs in an independent school, there is a number of conditions that have to be met. One is the facilities need to comply with municipal code. The school needs to operate according to the Independent School Act, regulations and orders. The students need to participate in provincial assessments, and the schools have to submit to regular external evaluations by the Office of the Inspector of Independent Schools. And that a full assessment occurs every 6 years, and it's monitored every 2 years. And in addition to that, all of the teachers must be certified, and there must be a certified principal in charge of the school as well. So what you have is a situation where it's an alternative educational program to the public sector that operates with fully certified staff, operates with facilities that are consistent with code expectations of the municipality. So it's a safe environment for kids, and it is monitored very carefully by the Office of the Inspector of Independent Schools.
Are the teachers a member of the BC Teachers Federation?
Okay, that's a good question. No, none of our teachers are members of the BCTF. However, there are, I believe the number is six. Six independent schools are unionized, and the majority of them happen to be in the Victoria area, by the way. So there are some schools that choose to certify under a union, but the vast majority have chosen not to.
Would that be like a QP type of scenario or a secondary teachers union?
In one case, it is the QP. Mm-hmm. And in Vancouver here, it's a different union, and I'm not absolutely certain what it is.
Okay. I'm surprised and at the same time impressed at first of all, the high level, close to 12% of folks that are making this choice, and also interesting that while a public school component of education might be in a strike mode, you folks would not be. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Peter.
Something that may also surprise you, sorry for interjecting here,
is
a lot of people, your listeners may be surprised to learn that within independent schools, there are a large number of special needs students that require additional learning support. The perception in many cases is that, okay, independent schools, they're doing so well academically because they selectively choose their enrollment. Well, that is true in a handful of cases where schools are looking to they have a university entrance program and they emphasize high academic performance, and yes, there would be a limited number of special needs students there. Mm-hmm. But within the regular, what we call Group 1 independent schools, the distribution of special needs students and students with learning needs is starting to look very similar to that of the public system. And that is in large part due to the government in 2005 has provided 100% funding for students that have identified learning needs. Mm-hmm. And that has shifted the landscape significantly.
I bet.
With public and independent schools. And we're seeing in the public, for example, if I can use a statistic, about 4.5 of the enrollment in a public system, they are funded students with special needs. And within independent schools, it's about 4%. So we're only 0.5% apart. And that shift has largely occurred because the government has provided support for these highly vulnerable students. And they occur now in both schools in proportionate rates.
Wow. Those are things I don't know. Yeah. Can if we can stay on the statistical side for a moment, is there an average class size, or is that not because of the nature of who you are? Is that impossible to say?
Average class size, we don't have that statistic available, and it would vary substantially.
Sure.
And the reason for that is because if you go to some of the schools up in northern British Columbia, they don't have the enrollment to fill up a class to 30, for example, in the intermediate grades. But if you get down here in the valley and you look at some of the larger independent schools, you will find the class sizes are very similar, but probably slightly lower. And I think it would be safe to say that if you made a general statement about independent schools, class sizes would indeed be lower. And if you look at the composition issue, the composition issue would also be somewhat favorable towards independent school, although, as I pointed out with the stats on special needs students, you see the same issues that independent schools are having to deal with that public schools also are dealing with. And I might add, public schools in many cases have a much more severe issue with composition.
Yeah. Peter, we've just got a couple of minutes left here. Maybe we can sort of go to a more general philosophical, if we can, sort of perspective on this. You've got a great quote on your website from the father of modern liberalism, John Stuart Mill, and I'll just sort of read the first part of it. The objections which are urged with reason against state education do not apply to the enforcement of education by the state, but to the state's taking upon itself to direct that education. what tensions are there, if any, between your schools and the public system, but more particularly between your schools and the province, who is the education regulator here, is the state as far as education is concerned? Are there friction points? Are there tension points? And how do those get sorted out?
Okay, the short answer is yes.
What a politically great answer. I don't know what he's saying yes to.
Well, that's beautiful.
Let's talk about the schools, first of all.
I'll just let you know we've got about a minute, Peter. So.
Oh, darn. This is.
Hey, let me give you a quick answer.
Okay.
Insofar as schools, many of the public systems, they view us as competition to the public system. We don't see it that way. It's simply a choice that we have in the province of British Columbia for parents to choose the education that's appropriate for their kids. And that competition, that isn't consistent in all districts. Some districts work incredibly well with independent schools.
Yeah.
In terms of government, this government has been very supportive of independent schools. But there are times of tension where funding becomes an issue. We're always monitoring that. Where policies become an issue that may not be as favorable to independent schools as we would like. But in general, we have a very good working relationship with government. They ask us to participate in the new directions for the new BC Education Plan, for example. We're part of that process. Our teachers are part of that process. And we see ourselves as an equal partner in improving the quality of education for the students in this province.
Well, Peter, I want to thank you.
That's a great interview.
For being on the show. Just regarding your last comment, I like to think competition is a good thing. And I would suggest that anyone in the public school system who thinks that competition is a bad thing, they're the problem.
Yeah, I would rephrase that slightly. I would say choice is a good thing.
Yes.
Because
right.
As in a democratic system, when I go out and buy a car, when I buy my milk, when I buy my groceries, I want choice.
Well, and choice means
to have that choice in education is a real delight.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you again for being with us.
Thanks,
we're going to have to break for commercial and news at the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll be speaking with the Home Learners Association of BC.